everyone, and welcome to the Narnia Web Council. I'm your host, Rillian, and we are here to discuss The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, basically beginning our analysis, not just a review, but really an analysis of the film. Today we have Warrior for Jesus. Hello, Warrior.
Hello, everyone. Good to be here.
And we also have JimFan15. Welcome, JimFan.
Hello.
And lo and behold, we have returning... Bring out the thunder, Clumpuddle.
Greetings, post-movie Narnia Webbers.
So, basically, we're going to do... There's no way we can try to do the whole thing as an analysis in this podcast, so we're basically going to nitpick like Narnia Webbers and just start going through the film. This is going to be kind of informal, just going starting from the beginning, and we'll see how far we get in this episode. So don't feel rushed, guys. We'll just go... However, we need to.
I'm rubbing my hands together right now with anticipation. Yeah, I love nitpicking.
Yeah, well, Glumpuddle, with that, why don't, Glumpuddle, I think you've seen the film most recently. Mm-hmm. I think you just recently had your third viewing.
Yep.
And so do you want to just kind of hit off and just where we just start discussing the film? I don't really have an agenda here. We'll go for about half an hour or so.
Okay. Well, we start off, first off, we have... the Fox logo instead of the Disney logo at the beginning, of course, and then the Walden Media logo fades into the first shot, just as it did in Prince Caspian. Looks like that's going to become possibly a running thing through all the films. Kind of reminded me of the first shot of Raiders of the Lost Ark. I think is it the Paramount logo that fades into a real mountain?
Yeah, that's for the first film.
But and then we've got. I guess the first thing we could talk about is the opening credits, or really lack of opening credits. There's only like three of them, unlike Wardrobe and Caspian that both had extended opening credit scenes. Wardrobe with the kids on the train, and Caspian with Caspian riding away. So I guess we could talk about how we feel about that, and I guess, Rillian, you want to talk about your thoughts on the beginning as far as the credits or lack of credits, and do you think there should have been longer credits, and what do you think?
I don't know, I'm kind of a fan right now of movies just starting you right into the, really getting you right into the action. I think if you're going to have some kind of long series of opening credits, you need to have a good device. I think the best device for the first two films is really the train scene. So I think that was, in that case with Lionel, the Wardrobe worked well. You know, you had a whole scene without opening without any credits whatsoever, and then you actually had the train scene that had them. So I think there it worked well. In Voyage of the Dawn Treader, I can't really think of some way to have it. So I don't really miss the fact that the way they did it there. I think they probably got into it fairly quickly, which is probably what they should have done in this case. But JimFan, how about you? I mean, what do you think of just how they kind of started off the first few moments of the film? I mean, it's pretty big contrast to just the excitement they had with the first two.
Right. I guess I never really thought about it that way, where how Wardrobe and Prince Caspian have fairly intense openings, where this one sort of just comes in very softly. I don't mind it at all. I really like the way it sort of opened and the music plays the Dawn Treader theme, and it sort of fit the whole setting, and I thought it was a really nice opening for the film. Just not too flashy. It made me excited for the film, like sitting down when I saw the film for the first time and, you know, the fading from black and just seeing the church or whatever it was and hearing the music. It's like, it's Narnia! So I liked it.
Actually, I'll just say that was Cambridge, and that's just what Cambridge looks like. And I kind of liked the kind of illusion that maybe you start off in Narnia, and then you all of a sudden have the plane flying through the shot. And when I was in Oxford, I mean, that's what Christchurch looks like. But Warrior, how about you? What do you think of just the first opening of the film and how they brought that in?
I guess I didn't. Know what to expect. I knew the opening images roughly from our reports on Narnia Web, but I thought I did miss the longer intro that led into the movie, like the Lion, the Witch and Wardrobe and Prince Caspian had, but I really don't know how they'd do it differently for Voyage of the Dawn Treader. There was no defining moment in the story, the way they were adapting it, to lead into the story, you know, in a way that would get the audience's attention straight away. I was fine with it, but I guess yeah. I do like the slower lead-in, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was something that I realized was going to be... I just could not for the life of me think of any kind of exciting jump into the story, kind of in medias res entrance for Voyage of the Dawn Treader. I think that that was something that the story just kind of lacked. But, I mean, it's not really a fault for the story. It's just a difference in the film. You can't treat all the books in the same when adapting them. But we quickly move into really just the first scene with Edmund and Lucy.
Well, hang on here. Hang on. I have a couple thoughts on the opening credits here.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Believe it or not.
Go ahead. Okay. Oh, sorry. I skipped over you. I'm sorry.
Well, I really love the opening credits of Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and I also like the ones in Caspian as well. But it really gives you a chance to sit back and just be with these characters before the adventure begins. Just kind of establish what is their plight. In the case of Wardrobe, it's like, oh, they're nervous about what are they going to find? Who's their caretaker going to be? And one of my bigger criticisms of this film is that, to me, I find it so hard to get emotionally involved in what's going on because the whole story just goes by in a speeding blur. And I think that was a problem that starts right off from the get-go. We're just sort of tossed into what Edmund's doing. And whereas with Wardrobe and Caspian, we really had a sense to sit back and say, okay, we're in this movie. Here's kind of get a sense of the tone, the flavor, the feel. Just get emotionally connected. And here I felt like because it starts off so quickly with just, okay, here's Cambridge, here's Edmund, off we go. I didn't really have a chance to get connected. So that was a big disappointment for me.
I'll admit that, yeah, I did have a hard time just jumping into Voyage of the Dawn Treader. I didn't feel as invested in the characters. I felt like they were really depending heavily on the first two films, as in, okay, we're counting on the fact that you already like these characters, which is not the best way to go about a film like this. But I suppose they could have done something different, like, I don't know, maybe a goodbye from the parents, and then they drive off in a car to their uncle and aunts while maybe reading a letter from Susan. Maybe that would have been a better way of doing it. I find it hard to really criticize them for this when I'm not sure I have a much better suggestion. But I will admit, I will agree with you, Glumpuddle, that I think my feeling of... I guess I was hoping that the beginning would just kind of pull me right in, right there, and then at the beginning I'd say, to kind of get me off to a good start of liking the film, and I wasn't really pulled in that way.
Now, don't get me wrong. I agree with Jim Fan, where it's like you see the Narnia logo, and that's always a thrill. Like, oh, wow, the movie's starting. This is cool. But that was kind of it for me. I didn't really get an emotional connection. But obviously, I think you disagree, Jim Fan.
I was just going to say, to be fair, you can't compare the two openings of the pre-two films with this one because it's like the difference between Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, Prince of Caspian, the books, and Dawn Treader, the movie. The books are, you know, someone or something, you know, they've got problems, and, you know, Wardrobe, it starts with the peasants, but then you go into Narnia, you see Narnia's peril with the witch. Prince Caspian starts out with Caspian's life is a peril. Dawn Treader, there's no in peril, not in the book. They added some in the film, but not in the book. So even if the movie had been 100% of the book, you still wouldn't have had that something really exciting. Well, you know, it would have. I still think it would have gone mostly the same.
Well, I'm not saying. I don't know whether or not the problem could have been helped or not. At the moment, I'm just saying it is a problem, and I was unable to get emotionally connected. I don't think enough time has gone past. I haven't seen the film enough times to start making suggestions. At the moment, all I can say is I lacked an emotional connection. Whether or not that could have been helped, I don't know. But it is a flaw of the film, nonetheless, whether it could have been helped or not.
And I think that your complaint here, Glumpuddle, is not that there was a lack of excitement. It's really the excitement in the first two films was used as a means to get the investment in the characters and to get to know the characters a little bit and reveal little bits about their personalities. Mm-hmm. And I think that what you're saying is that even if there wasn't excitement, there should have been some other means to learn about the characters and to get that investment early on.
Yeah.
But I think they do, I mean, they do try to reveal a bit about the characters in the opening scene. I mean, it's done in a very dialogue-heavy way, and it's not subtle. It's not something that would work well with a bunch of opening credits, but they do try to do that pretty quickly.
Yes, that's true. Who wants to talk about that first?
Warrior, you know, why don't you kind of start up on this opening scene? We have Edmund trying to join the army, which is an interesting character development for him. We have Lucy comparing herself to that other girl and wanting to look pretty. But that whole scene, kind of inside and out, starting with Edmund, you know, let's just discuss Edmund first, actually. What do you think about that? How did you respond to it?
I even when we saw the previews of this scene in the trailer, I think it was, I didn't have a problem with it. In the movie, I didn't have a problem with it because I just saw it as Edmund wanting to be... he had experienced his being a king in Narnia, and he wanted to fight great battles and fight for the truth. If it was just a pride thing, I would have a problem with it, but I don't know... I hope that's not what they were trying to communicate, because that's not what I got out of it. I got out of it that Edmund wanted to do the right thing. He wanted to, say, join up with the army to fight for the truth, to fight for his country, to prove... Well, yes, I guess to prove that he wasn't a boy, that he was a man, but I don't think that's all that was to it, yeah.
Yeah. I think, for me, it seemed like a rehash of Peter's character development. It seemed really... it seemed like they were just, oh, hey, this works. This worked for Peter's character, or they think it worked for Peter's character in Prince Caspian, so let's have Edmund go through the exact same thing. And I'm kind of saying, wait, what? Can't they get over this? I mean, isn't that what we already dealt with? And also, it seemed like Edmund's character is kind of taking maybe like one, as far as the greater context of all three films, maybe one step forward, three steps back. Because I think, wait, what was the point of, you know, him, you know, being so likable in Prince Caspian? Why didn't he have a problem with that in Prince Caspian the way Peter did? And why is he having such a problem with it now? It seemed like he had lost some of the maturity that he seemed to have in the second film.
I can see where you're coming from, but personally, as a viewer, it wasn't one of those things like, some parts later in the movie, I was just head in my hands like, oh no, what's going on? This was not one of those moments. It was like, this may not be the best. They could have done this part better, yes, but it's not a complete disaster. So let's just accept it and move on. I think that's what I was thinking at the time, really.
Yeah, and maybe, I don't, I mean, I kind of wonder, what if they hadn't taken that development with Peter's character in the second film? How would I respond now? I'm not really sure. I guess... And I think you raised some valid points. I think that Edmund wasn't just out for a joyride and an adrenaline rush, but, and I think he is frustrated that, and I could imagine them being frustrated, but not displaying it in that way. It seemed like they were a lot more mature in the books than to display it in that way. But what do you think, Jim Fenn?
I think it's pretty unfortunate that there has to be a similarity between the two. I guess we could say, I wish they hadn't done it with Peter so we could have had it with Edmund, because I think it works so much better here. I think in the context, it's a lot, it makes sense, and I don't think it makes him seem less mature. I'm trying to understand where he is in his life and the time period he's in, and all his friends are, you know, going to war. That was a very... People tried, you know, they just joined up for the army because they felt it was their duty, even if they didn't have the whole background that Edmund does. And here you have him, he's feeling even more obligated because he actually kind of knows as far as it comes to serving his country and fighting and protecting others. So it just seems... It's different. I mean, it manifests it in somewhat the same way, but I think the situations are completely different, so I don't have a problem with it at all.
Well, I will admit that it does not... it does come across very differently with Edmund's character than it did with Peter, where Edmund's frustrated and, you know, he responds maybe not too well when he can't get into the army by trying to lie, but it is different with Peter when, you know, Peter doesn't like it, so he gets into a brawl with some bullies and stuff. So, Glumpuddle, what are your thoughts on this? I know you've just been listening patiently.
Hey, well, to be honest, I think we're all reading into this way too much, and this is actually a total not that important of a scene. I think all they're trying to do is establish that Edmund hates being at Eustace's house and really wants to get away, so he just wants to join the army to get away. I really think that's all this is. I don't think it's supposed to be any kind of deeper reflection on Edmund's character or anything. And the fact that he's saying, oh, but I'm a king, I've led armies, that's just kind of his reaction to the fact that he feels embarrassed about what happened, where he kind of got humiliated. And his reaction is, wow, if only they knew I was a king. That's just kind of for that scene, he felt embarrassed. I don't think this is necessarily a huge thing of, oh, what's happening with Edmund's character or anything. All they're trying to do is establish Edmund is at Eustace's house and he really doesn't like it. And that's kind of all we're supposed to take away from this scene.
Huh. Okay. So what did you think of, do you have any thoughts on what they did with Lucy's development in the scene immediately after? I mean, it's brief. It's a lot more subtle.
It's brief. I don't know if I would call it subtle, because it totally kind of throws a wrench into the scene in terms of editing and pacing. You're kind of watching it, then out of nowhere, Lucy looks at some random girl and checks herself out. It's like, what the heck was that? To me, it was a not very subtle, I guess, setup. You don't know it's a setup at the time, but it's kind of like, what the heck was that all about? What was that doing there? Where if you look at some of the Pixar films, for example, they're very, very good at having scenes that's setting up something important. But at the time, you don't know it's a setup. It just seems true to that scene. It doesn't stick out to you at all. Then later, oh, that was important. It becomes important later. So I guess I don't necessarily have a problem with this whole arc they come up with for Lucy. It's more about, I didn't think it was terribly, it was kind of clumsily shoehorned into there.
Do you think it was a valid point for them to try to make as far as just what was going to be coming up later? I mean, regardless of what did happen later with the magician's book and everything, do you think it was something that was fair for them to try to insert, even if they did it maybe a little more clumsily than you would have liked?
I don't mind the idea of Lucy, growing up and starting to compare herself to Susan and that kind of thing, and where does she get her sense of identity and struggling with those issues. I don't have a problem with that. I just think the way it was set up was kind of clumsily done. So conceptually, I don't think it's a bad idea. I just don't think it was terribly well done. It's kind of heavy-handed, whereas C.S. Lewis tended to be a little more subtle and nuanced, and this just seems kind of heavy-handed to me.
Warrior, any thoughts?
She seemed like she was reverting a bit back to a child, and like she was trying to be a bit of a Susan character, but it came off that she was being a bit immature, so I don't know that I really liked it. Like, it did establish what would happen later on. She was wanting that, or at least jealous of, you know, Susan and other girls' attraction, their appearance, but, yeah, I don't know, it was a bit of a backward step in some ways. In some ways, it was really good in that it developed what happened further on, but I don't know, it just seemed a bit strange.
Jim Van, did you have any thoughts on this?
No, not really. I mean, I would agree with Glumpuddle that it's a bit heavy-handed, not the most subtle of scenes. I think we could say hardly any of the things in the movie are very subtle. As far as it fitting in with Lucy's character, I don't think it is incorrect to say that that would be something she would be thinking about. Even in the book, you know, when she's in the magician's room with the book of spell, the person doesn't just go from being normal to being, oh yeah, I would just love to be beautiful. It's usually something that they've been thinking about for a while, and it's been part of their thought process for a while. So it sets up her character nicely. I mean, it is a bit clumsy, but it works.
I think that I have to agree with Glumpuddle. It was a bit heavy-handed. I actually did see it jump out to me as an allusion to what would happen later on. Maybe it's because I'd read the book. I think here's what my biggest problem was. Both points on both the characters in this whole scene But the way they tried to develop Edmund and introduce him, the way they tried to develop Lucy and introduce her, I think that they were trying to make some valid points that were consistent with their characters in the book. But I think that the fact they did them in not necessarily very likable ways, you didn't necessarily like them very much for the way they were introduced, or those valid points weren't necessarily the most likable parts about them, didn't necessarily emphasize just and valiant, I guess. I think that that put a damper on it for me, and just overall, I didn't necessarily enjoy the scene that much. So I think that's kind of my biggest complaint with this, just the scene as a whole.
You're picking them in their weaker moments as their introduction.
Yeah, and I don't mind picking their weaker moments, but I think that just the way they introduced them, it made them not quite as likable for me.
But as their introduction.
Right, as an introduction. Yeah.
Now I've got, so all in all, so I had some big problems at this scene, but I do want to mention some things I really, really liked about this. First off, we can't go through this as fans, we can't move on without mentioning how they did find a way to work the very first line in the book into the movie.
Yes.
Where Edmund says, oh, Eustace, if there ever was someone who deserves such a name, or I can't remember exactly how he says it, but they did find a way to reference the first line in the book. There was a boy called Eustace Clarence Scrub, and he almost deserved it. That was awesome. First time I saw it, I was like, oh, that was pretty clever. I remember thinking, how could they find a way to get this into the movie? That was a pretty good one. And they didn't stop the movie or anything and have him talk to the camera and say it. It was just kind of there. You'll only catch it if you're really listening and you're a fan. I like that. Another thing, a subtle thing I really liked, and that kind of goes back to the opening shot of the film, was the inclusion of the planes, and then they come back again at the end of this scene. It was a nice, subtle way of reminding the audience that World War II is still going on, and all, which is an important part of saying, hey, this is a real world with real characters. This really took place. You know, it gives it a historical context. So having the planes flying over is a way of saying, hey, World War II is still going on, without having to actually come out and say that. So that was actually wonderfully subtly done. I really like that element of the scene.
Okay. Well, so, I mean, basically, like,
We can move on. We can talk a little about the Uncle Harold scene a little bit in Susan's letter, I guess.
Yeah, we'll talk. Let's talk about that a little bit. Just overall impressions and what we how we think this works.
Well, first off, we transition to Lucy coming home with the groceries, and you never do see Uncle Harold's face. He's reading a newspaper, and Lucy says, "Oh, we have a letter from Susan." It has kind of a creepy smile, and then we actually see Susan writing the letter, and it's basically saying, you know, oh, you know, we can't get home because of the Germans and everything. Again, kind of keeping World War II in the background there. And, I know I met this, like, army dude or whatever, and he kind of fancies me, sort of setting up Lucy's whole arc a little bit. I guess the only thing, of course there's Eustace's introduction, shows him writing in his journal, which is one of the things that I'll talk about in a later episode, I guess. It's one thing I always said would probably not work in a movie. It actually worked really well. I'm sure that at some point all of us will want to freeze frame that slow shot of his bedroom. And because there's a lot of little Easter eggs, I think, like you see the bugs in a jar and, you know, little things I kind of remember being mentioned in the book, and I really appreciated that.
Yeah, I did like that.
And I liked how, you know, when they walk in...
Yeah, but his certificate of hygiene is on the box.
Oh, is it really? That's hilarious. I can't wait to look for that. I think there's going to be a lot of little Easter eggs in there once they get to freeze frame it.
That's awesome.
All in all, I thought it was a good introduction for him. I like him writing in his journal. You get kind of get a taste of how what the world looks like through Eustace's eyes, which is kind of funny. And then when Lucy walks in, he kind of looks up like he's really eager to annoy. I thought that worked really well. It was a good introduction for him. I thought it was dumb how Eustace – I'm sorry, not Eustace, but Edmund – kind of sticks out his tongue at Uncle Harold. That was really immature and stupid and silly. And then overall thoughts on the Susan letter scene. I thought showing Susan kind of made sense. It's Susan's connection to Lucy's arc in this movie. And again, keeping World War II in the background there. So I didn't like the Uncle Harold scene, but I like I like the introduction of Eustace. One of my fears was, are they just trying to shoehorn Susan into this movie somehow? I don't think they did. I think having Susan in the movie actually did make sense.
Yeah.
Right here, at least.
Yeah, no, I think that I like Eustace's introduction a whole lot. I thought it might have been a bit over the top to have the part about him investigating the ramifications of impaling relatives, but...
yeah,
I thought, that's not something a pacifist would do, but okay. overall, I really, overall, I really liked Eustace's introduction, and I think I'll hit on this maybe later. Edmund sticking his tongue out at his uncle, I thought, was just one of those little immature things about Edmund's character in this. But yeah, overall, I thought, as far as getting Susan into the film, I thought it made perfect sense with her, seeing her write the letter. It seemed natural, it seemed like part of the story. It had that little sense of, yes, she's still a character, but she's not a part of this story. It was just kind of one of those little allusions to, this is a real world, people have their own things going on, even if we don't focus on them here and now. So, Jim Fenn, how about you? Do you have any thoughts on this scene? And then, Warrior, we'll go back to you.
I really like the introduction of Eustace. It's like almost said, there's lots of little Easter eggs in that scene, and it sets up the way his mind works. And I didn't really, the line about him, you know, impaling his rope, that didn't really bother me. That just seemed to me like that's the way his sense of humor works, almost. You know, like he's just having fun. Not like it. Okay, I'm going to stop now because I'm not making any
Fair enough.
Sense.
No, that does make sense. That it was, I didn't even think about that. That Eustace was kind of making a joke to himself. I guess that does kind of make sense.
That's just the way his brain works. He's very, what's the word?
Sardonic.
That probably would fit. Yeah, we'll say that works.
Yeah, I really see where you're coming from there. I didn't look at the line from that perspective. I guess that now that you mention that, that actually does make a lot more sense to me. I feel better about that line now.
And him and his bag of sweets and all his books on the wall. Oh, that I love that.
Warrior, any thoughts?
I love the introduction of Eustace with showing all the very factual and very sciencey type paraphernalia around his room. I liked his comment about comment about impaling his relatives. I found it funny, and yes, even though he's a pacifist, he is going to show that his great hatred for his cousins. Doesn't mean he'll go through with it, but just the idea of it there to show how a truly horrible person he is.
Yeah, I don't think we assumed he would go through with it.
I thought the writing in his diary was really good to establish that early on. Uncle Harold was fine, although it was a bit weird that his face was hidden behind the newspaper. It was a bit of a Dr. Claw, Inspector Gadget sort of moment. You'd think, oh, he's going to be the great villain or something, if you didn't know the story. That's the feeling I had. But it might have worked, like, being quite impersonal, I guess. Like, you're not attaching a face to him, so he seems a bit more distant. That might have been what they were going for. When Edmund was poking his tongue out at Uncle Harold, that was a bit odd. I didn't like that. I know he might have had some immaturity traits, but it just seemed very, you know, just one of those moments the scriptwriters put in for a bit of a laugh. It didn't exactly follow on from his character development of him still having issues, you know, still being having flaws, even though he's obviously been transformed by Aslan. I liked Susan's letter. I thought that established Lucy's issues early on, and also introduced Susan back into the story to just tell people what was happening with her. Overall, I quite enjoyed the scene. But there was that poking out the tongue scene that I didn't like.
When y'all were talking about how seems slightly immature in this movie, I actually don't really have a problem with that. I don't think it would have made sense for him to be suddenly this really mature, really heroic character. I think the fact that he has moments like that of weakness, I think that is his character. Like, the Edmund from Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe was a real jerk, and you know, he got better, but there's still aspects of his personal, it's still going to be there, it's still going to show, just like parts of Eustace after he became better, you know, there was still parts of Eustace that was the old Eustace. So I didn't mind that there was aspects of Edmund that was like the old Edmund, because it's showing that he's not perfect, he's still working on it, and it just seemed it didn't seem like it was contrary to his character, I guess I was trying to say. Like, in Prince Caspian, he came off really heroic, but that was because the focus was on Peter's flaws. You didn't really see much of Edmund. There wasn't a chance for him to have much development like that. So I just want to throw that out there.
Well, that's a whole new discussion, and I think we all will have things to say about that, and I think it'd probably be best to save that for another podcast.
Oh, can I just do one thing?
Well, I'm just saying, because if we're going to talk about Edmund's character development,
I'm just talking about this one moment.
Okay.
Where he sticks out his tongue.
Glumfuddle, I'll let you say something on this one moment. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, it's true that. I mean, to me, it's just like, I think anyone Edmund's age doing that, I would have thought, give me a break. I don't buy it. I just think that if he was, like, you know, a few years younger, maybe. But this is like, I just thought it was really, really cheesy. It wasn't, oh, this is contrary to Edmund's character. It's like, this is contrary to virtually any character of Edmund's age. I mean, Edmund was like that in Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Edmund was also a few years younger in Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. So to me, it's just, for almost any character, I think I would have had a problem with it. It just seemed really lame. Like, they kind of come up with another way to for him to show his disgust with Uncle Harold. I thought it was kind of lazy.
Yeah, because how old is he supposed to be? What, 15, 16?
Well, in the movie, I guess he's probably about 16, I suppose.
Yeah. So I think that's a good point there. But as far as I had issues with Edmund's character.
Can I just say something? When people are rude to me at work, when I'm alone, I stick my tongue out.
Well, there you go. Now that's on the internet for
it's
the world to know.
It's not completely contrary to character.
Well,
maybe it was just
a
bad performance by Skander. I don't know.
I have issues with Edmund's maturity in this film just running throughout, and I'll bring that up later. I'm not going to bring it up right now. Maybe at Deathwater. Well, guys, we've talked for about 40 minutes. Just on the first few scenes. I don't know, we might have to ramp it up a little bit later on. We'll see. But this is what Narnie Webbers do. Any closing thoughts, anything you have to say before we wrap up? Warrior, Jim Fan, Glumfuddle? On this, what we've talked about, this first few minutes of the movie.
Sure, well, I guess I'll just summarize my thoughts at this point in the film, on my first viewing. Okay, there are definitely some big flaws here, some things, oh man, this isn't really grabbing me, I'm not really feeling emotionally involved, and it's going kind of fast. But there's also some things I really liked, the way World War II is kind of subtly set up, and I like the introduction of Eustace, and like that little way they got the opening line of the film, or of the book into the film. So to me, okay, this is not a terribly encouraging start, but at this point in the film, I'm still kind of thinking, okay, this is not unsalvageable, this is going to get better, I think that the best is yet to come. So I guess to get to say at this point in the film, just kind of I'm still kind of waiting for it to pull me in.
Warrior?
Okay. For me, these first few scenes, I didn't have many problems with them, but there were a few flaws that did prevent me being fully invested in the story from the get-go. But yeah, I did like how they established that World War II was still going on, and it was in the back of everyone's minds, obviously in the forefront of more people's minds, but it was still going on, so there was still that fear and that that feeling to do one's duty for one's country, which Edmund obviously showed. And then moving to the Scrubs house, I thought the house looked nice, like the set was all good, and yeah, I didn't really have many problems with that scene, except Edmund's behaviour with the sticking out of his tongue. That's about it. As a whole, I quite enjoyed it.
Jim Fan, overall, did you enjoy this part of the movie?
I didn't have many problems with most of the film up until, pretty sure y'all know what that certain point was. But yeah, the only things that I say, like, oh, well, I didn't like, that's only come after, like, if I sit down and I'm discussing it. Overall, no problems. No real problems. Quite liked it.
I started enjoying it at the part where Eustace came in. I was smiling at a part where I was supposed to be smiling. So that's the part of the film where I think I really felt like I was getting a glimpse of the book. And there were a few parts in the movie where I felt like I was watching a part of the book. But overall, it just didn't move me. It's not like I really dislike it. Oh man, I can't believe this. I was sort of sitting there going, eh. But no, Will Poulter, two thumbs up. Well, I don't know how we're going to get through the whole movie, but yeah. We will do our best. This is the end of part one, and thank you all for joining me.
We'll have to be very, very disciplined to not have this be a 90-part podcast to get through the whole movie. So we'll see how long it takes us. But by the time we get it done, Silver Tear will be out.
Yeah, there you go.
One can wish.
Thanks for having us, Rillian.
Oh, thank you.